Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
No one is more locked in.
From Thursday to Monday, no one is more locked into the NFL
than First and Pod.
Hosted by Danny Parkin and Andrew Filippone.
All right, well, this is special. It is First and Pod. You know the drill. And for next week's episode, we will do our official mock draft, and we will probably be referencing this pod, because it is the expert from In the Huddle. You get that on the same network, wherever you get your podcast. Wherever you find this podcast, First and Pod, you can find In the Huddle. He's Odyssey NFL insider. The man grinds the tape. The man knows his stuff. He is Brian Baldinger. What up, Baldy?
Hey, guys. Here we are. We're in the countdown. You know, I mean, we're taping this on Thursday night, April 11th. 2 weeks from now, we'll probably be like at pick number 20. Something like that.
You Which know, is 15, where my 20. Steelers pick, Baldy. I can't help but think you did that on purpose. You also wore your SMU shirt because you know I go by the Pony Express.
Yeah.
But we've talked about that before, so thank you for having a dress coordination with the podcast for those
people. It could have also been the only clean shirt I had to put on here tonight. That could have been the case, too.
Fair enough. Yeah. Hey, Baldy, we got a ton to get into, but I just want to have you confirm a story to Danny that I've shared on this podcast, and you are somewhat involved in it, and I just need you to clarify.
I'll see what I can do.
True. Thank you.
All right.
So, Danny, I think I've told you this. Baldy did NFL games with Pat Summerall at the end of Pat's career.
Yes.
And Baldy and I share a mutual friend whose name is Robbie Insmakowski.
Robbie was just on my couch last Friday at this time.
Who for years was the producer. He was Pat Summerall's right-hand man at the end for Fox. And so Robbie told me, Baldy, that at the end of his career, they would give words to Pat to sneak into the Fox broadcast.
That's very true. It's very
and
true.
And in one of the final games, maybe his very last, the word was tampon. And Pat got tampon on the air because he's one of the greatest of all time. Is that, can you confirm that for everybody?
Well, the story is partially true. Pat never got tampon on the air. He got Government Mule on the air because Robbie liked listening to Government Mule. You know, there's a number of things that he got in, but that was the one where he said he could never get into a broadcast.
Oh, okay.
And he did it for a lot of his career in all sports, bowling. He did it in tennis. You know, a word would like come about during the week getting ready for the broadcast. That's the one where he never got in. So Robbie has a hard time getting stories completely straight. He's like in the vicinity code. He tries hard. He'll screw up his quote. He'll screw up a story. But we know and come to love that's Robbie.
Yes.
What's the funniest word that Summerall ever got in?
Gosh, I got to go back 2002. I remember we were in Green Bay I think it was like Green Bay and Carolina, and Carolina was just getting run on. And he said something like, the Carolina Panthers need some big old cows in the middle of that line and maybe a government mule. And when he just went high five, like he got it in there, you know, in order to stop this rushing attack today.
So, that's amazing.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll talk about the biggest stories, but I sometimes like going like this, like you study all of the film and then you consume all of the media. I'm curious what majority consensus opinion that's out there. Maybe it's Caleb Williams, top quarterback, Marvin Harrison, top receiver, Dallas Turner, top edge, like whatever, what is the consensus opinion that Brian Baldinger disagrees with?
Well, I mean, I see Drake May going as high as number two. And I think Drake May is a prospect, but I like watching quarterbacks against the best teams. So if you watch him against North Carolina State and Clemson at the end of this year or the end of last year, he wasn't very good. You know, I mean, you wouldn't draft him. You know, you might draft Michael Penix off his Texas tape alone in front of him. But you wouldn't draft Drake May number two if you watch North Carolina State and Clemson. Now, you can make all the excuses you want. Quarterback's got to complete passes. And when you're wildly off, it just – like, I don't care. I mean, I know he looks the part. He's got the arm. He's got the frame. He's got – you know, he's got – you know, Coach Brown will, you know, confirm all these things at North Carolina. And it's not a Duke bias that I say this about Drake. I mean, Drake could have played anywhere. I just question whether – is this going to be another one of these mistakes that we see – that we see almost every year, guys that are picked at the top of the draft at this position and don't pan out. Like, is this going to be one of those guys?
Baldy, was his 2022 tape something that you would draft him in the top five off of? Was it well, that much better?
You know, he lost his last four games in 2022. All right. I mean, I think they finished 8-4. Or maybe I forget what they finished that year, but I think he lost his last four games. Now, it wasn't all his fault, for sure. I mean, they scored a lot of points in a couple of those games. And so, but I mean, they did lose the last four. They did lose to State and I think to Clemson. I don't know that I would pick him in the top five. I know he had all that buzz coming into the season. Nobody was gonna outdo Caleb. Caleb was in a different class by himself. Jaden closed the gap a great deal winning the Heisman and playing like he did in big games against Alabama and some other teams and throwing to Malik and, you know, all the guys he threw to. But I felt like Dre was a guy that, okay, had a lot of buzz, you know, relieving Sam Howell, and he was highly recruited and all that. And I thought he played well, but I just have my question marks about the accuracy, and I keep coming back to that. Like, you could say, okay, C.J. Stroud last year, you could have questions about some of the things, C.J., okay, program, you know, receivers are ridiculous, all this stuff. But one thing you couldn't question with C.J., was his accuracy. Like, he was like it, that 70% was 70%. He put the ball where it had to be put. I can't say that about Drake right now.
That game against Duke was pretty good though this year. That would have been in the plus column for Drake May.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, Duke had, you know, before the quarterback went down, they were a quality team this year. They have some, you know, Graham and they had some Carter. They had some good players on the team. It was a good game. You know, you got to, I don't know. It's sometimes I just look at the way you finish. You're a quarterback. You're not playing the bowl game. You're getting ready for your combine, your workouts, you know, this part of the year. You just want to finish and leave no doubt when you go watch them against. And, you know, if you're watching anybody in the ACC, you're always watching a game against Clemson. You want to watch Graham Barton, go watch him against Clemson. I mean, because you know that Dable's going to have talent on the field, whether they're top five or top 10, they're going to be talented players that you're going against. When you watch, you know, Jeremiah Trotter, you watch the guys there right now, defensive tackles at Clemson. You want to see them against top flight personnel.
Baldy, I don't want to turn this into the Drake May exclusive podcast here, but I'm hearing all this. I can't help myself but want to ask, because Danny and I both lived through Mitch Trubisky experiences, and we're both traumatized by those Mitch Trubisky experiences. And he went to North Carolina, and he was a toolsy guy. And I just wonder, having studied both, would you say that Trubisky was a better prospect than Drake May on the limited tape that he had at North Carolina?
That's a great question. That's a great question, because it's not that far removed. He had 1 year of playing. He had been beaten out. He only played the 1 year at North Carolina. And he had a lot of the same attributes that Drake has: a big frame, he's a smart guy, he's a good teammate. Like, nobody will ever say a bad word as a teammate about Mitch. You might say things about reading defenses now that he went through Chicago and Buffalo and the places he's been. I don't think you'd say that about Drake right now, about, you know, being able to identify what the defense is, where to go with the ball, that kind of thing. Sam Howell was there. Sam Howell was the starter. You could debate Sam Howell. I still think he can be a pretty good player in this league. He's tough as can be. I know that. Just because it's this, they're similar physically and same school, I hope I'm wrong about Drake and what I'm saying here, and I hope it doesn't turn out to be Mitch Trubisky. Let me say that.
All right, so we obviously have a lot of Bears fans and a lot of Steelers fans that listen because of where Pony and I do radio. We all know Caleb Williams is going one to my Bears. What would you say is dream scenario for the ninth pick?
I would say, you know, if Dallas Turner is there, like it's a position of need, somebody opposite of Montez Sweat. He's got a lot of versatility, but he's a pretty polished pass rusher as it is right now with long arms, length, the ability to bend, turn the corner. Like it's a position of need, and I think he's the best pass rusher in this draft right now. Doesn't mean he's going to be the best 4 years from now. Max Crosby wasn't the best when he came in the fourth round of the Raiders, but he's amongst the top five in the league right now. So there's room for growth, but I feel like he's the type of guy that's going to get better. So I would say that would be a dream scenario if Chicago could add to that defense right now and keep building upon how they finished the season last year.
Baldy, I know Merrill Hodge pretty well, and he came out, I think it was at the Super Bowl, and just gave an unbelievably scathing analysis of Caleb Williams last year at USC and basically said everything he did was off schedule and none of those plays are really going to translate to the NFL. And he has real concerns about him as a quarterback. Now, Merrill's been hit or miss on some of these things. Like, he absolutely called Johnny Manziel. Not that that was really one that was a tough one to do, but I'm just interested. Like, do you see kernels of truth in what he said about Caleb Williams?
No, I don't have any doubts about Caleb. I was with him at a quarterback collective high school camp when he was coming out of D.C. But he was still in high school. He was going into his senior year. I sat down in the film room, threw up Mahomes, threw up Josh Allen, threw up guys at him, threw out coverages, blitzes, hot reads, how to defeat this coverage, what's your quarters beater. I mean, he knew every answer. And he was a joy to talk to. I still stay in touch with him. And I'm not here biased again, you know, for him and against Merrill. But I see what Merrill's saying, these off-schedule throws. The offense line was horrible. Like, I don't know what Caleb was supposed to do when there's a free runner coming right at him, but do what he did. I didn't see him just bailing to bail. I didn't see that part of his game. I think Lincoln's coached him really well. The offense is pretty simplistic, to be honest with you. You know, they didn't have a ton of talent on that team. I don't think any offensive linemen are getting drafted at USC. Maybe Marshawn Lloyd gets drafted at running back. You know, maybe Jerry Rice's son, Brendan, gets drafted.
Washington, the receiver.
That team. Defense was dreadful. If you didn't, like, there were shootout games, like, against Washington. Like, he had to score 50 to beat Washington. Washington scored, I think, 52 that day. They put 45 and they lost. Like, and I'm not making any comparisons at all with Caleb, like some people want to Patrick Mahomes. But I did Big 12 games when Mahomes was there. And he legitimately had to score 50 to beat Oklahoma or Baylor or TCU. And that's how he played with Cliff. They played to, and he did a lot of the same stuff that Caleb does. And everybody, not just because Merrill is saying this and you're bringing this up, I mean, people said the same thing about Patrick Mahomes. Like, the mechanics, you can't win in the NFL like this. These mechanics are bad. You can't just run all over and just throw these balls up in the air. Well, Patrick Mahomes became Patrick Mahomes. Now, you know, is Chicago going to give the same support that Andy Reid and what the Chiefs have done for Mahomes to allow him the level of success he had, including sitting his first year like he did behind Alex Smith and really learning what it was like to prepare? But to answer your question, I when I saw Caleb throw in high school, I thought if he went to the combine, he'd have the best arm at the combine. And I think from the day he took over in that Texas OU shootout, I think the talent has been as good as anybody's.
His eight losses at USC, the defense gave up at least 34 in all eight of them. And it was an average of 43 points per loud.
My point.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm echoing it with the specific stat. It's
And
I would imagine would lead you to go back and watch Notre Dame, right?
Everybody brings up the Notre Dame game last year. And look, there's no question. Like, one of the balls was tipped. Okay. It always falls on the quarterback. Ball's tipped. All right. It's on the quarterback. One, he's rolling left and he's, you know, he's trying to bend it around the tree. He doesn't make the throw. But it's a third down throw. Like, we're going to get – it's going to be another three and out against Notre Dame here. We got to – you know, so – and then one, I think, was in the red zone. He certainly forced it, but, you know, they're down, I don't know, 10 or 13 at the time. He's trying to – you know, he's trying to get back into the game. And so you go back and just watch the interceptions against Notre Dame. It's not like he can't throw the football or Notre Dame, okay, I heard these people saying, well, they played a man-free defense. He never saw that. I mean, okay. I mean, they did play that, and it's not like he hasn't seen man coverage before. So, I don't know. I don't have the concerns that Merrill has. Let me say that.
Danny has said on this podcast and on national TV, Brian, that the ceiling or the bar for Caleb Williams is greatest rookie season by a quarterback of all time, that he can have an Andrew Luck, Cam Newton type introduction to the NFL. Do you think — you mentioned the support system in Chicago and the season they had — this is not a 2-win or 3-win team he's stepping onto. They were in the playoff hunt, you know, with 2 weeks left. Mm-hmm. Do you see that as a possibility where we're talking about a guy that could throw 30 touchdowns and win 9 games or 10 games in year one?
Well, I mean, if you just look at recent history, whether it's Bryce Young or Joe Burrow or Trevor Lawrence, or, you know, I mean, Kyler Murray, you just look at the guys that were taken at the top of the draft and where they went and the teams they went to. Caleb's going to a better team than all those guys that I just mentioned. Joe Burrow got Jamar the next year and got healthy and, you know, they took off. But this is a better team than any of those guys I just mentioned. Now, I had to go back and think what Andrew Luck had him, Reggie Wayne, whoever was there, I would say that, you know, that might — you know, they might be able to compete with that. But, you know, they had Suck for Luck. They got Andrew Luck. So they had talent there. But this is a good situation. It's a really good – they played really good defense in the second half of the season. You know, once coach took over and ran the defense, they really got better. And they ran the ball very well last year, like they had. Justin was a part of it. But DJ looked like a number one wide receiver, and I don't know any quarterback that wouldn't get better with Keenan Allen. So I think a lot of the pieces are there for Caleb to have success. You know, 25, 30 touchdown passes, I think, is within reach of Caleb this year.
So that's why I want them to go offense at 9, because just keep supporting Caleb, and Keenan Allen will probably only be there.
It's a very good philosophy. Find your guy, just build around your guy, and never stop building. And
right.
You can say, look, if Joe Alt was there at 9 for some reason, he got past the Chargers in Tennessee for whatever reason, like, you have to go Joe Alt. And just go Braxton Jones, you're my swing tackle right now. Joe Alt's going to beat you out with his size tech, you know, the way that he plays.
Pony thinks Joe Alt stinks.
I didn't say that. Don't put words in my mouth and try to make me look bad in front of Baldy. I said that I think he's an overrated prospect because of his bloodlines. And Baldy's bringing up specific games like May against good teams. Find me the first round or second round edge rusher that Alt went up against, not in a practice setting, but in a game, and dominated him. The tape doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Look, I don't think Joe's going to be the best tackle in this draft, but I think he's an excellent technician. I think in some days when I watch him play, he reminds me of Joe Thomas. I'm not saying he's Joe Thomas. Joe Thomas never missed a down. But Joe Thomas was the ultimate technician in everything he did. He wasn't the best athlete. He didn't move bodies the way Trent Williams does. He wasn't as athletic as Lane Johnson is right now. But he was a Hall of Fame player, okay, because of his longevity, his durability, and the consistency of play. I think there's going to be players in this draft that are going to become better pros. They might not be on September 10th next year, but 2 years from now, they might be better. You know, Fuaga might be better. J.C. Latham might be better. There might be better guys than him. But right now, from a technical standpoint, he's technically very sound.
So everyone says it's a great receiver draft. It feels like every year now is a great receiver draft. Can you buy into the Malik Nabers over Marvin Harrison Jr. hype that has seemed to only start happening since the game stopped being played?
I could buy into the Roma Dunze hype over Marvin Harrison. Like, I can think you can make a solid case that he's the best receiver in this draft. I mean,
wow, really? Okay.
Well, Danny, I came on here and said that the Larry Fitzgerald comp got made right away, and I'm like, that's ridiculous. I watched this guy in college. Nobody's like Larry. Then I actually saw the highlights. I said, wait a minute. He does look like Larry Fitzgerald Baldy. It took my breath away. And well, he's got that character, too.
He catches everything with his hands. There's no body catches. I had somebody hit me up on Twitter after I did a breakdown of him, and they're like, how could you rave about somebody that has a 17% drop rate? And I knew the guy was wrong, but I'd say, oh, you know what? To hell with PFF. Let me go watch every play. Let me watch every target of Roma Dunze. I took 45 minutes. I watched every target, including his punt returns, including one a punt return for a touchdown. Like, I watched everything. He dropped 3 balls last year. 3. If you looked at his contested catch rate, it's 75%. Marvin's is 40-something percent. I'm not saying he's better than Marvin. I'm just saying you can't find a flaw in his game. Like, there is, it doesn't exist. And so I would have no problem making Roma Dunze the first wide receiver taken. Now, if you have to live, if Marvin Harrison follows his dad into the Hall of Fame, you have to live with that. But I would have no problem. Like, I can't see, and I know that you could stack these receivers, and not all of them can be great players because it never works that way. But I don't believe Rome is going to be the guy that's not going to be a great player.
I actually think it's the wide receiver equivalent this draft of the 04 quarterback draft with Manning, Rivers, and Roethlisberger, Baldy. I think all three, and I don't usually do this, but I think all three of these guys, depending on where they go and who they're with, yeah, can be Hall of Fame caliber wide receivers. All three. Now, okay. I don't know. I can't tell if you're as high. It doesn't sound like you're as big on Nabers as maybe the scouting world is.
You know, look, I mean, if you are the all-time leading receiver at LSU, and that means you were catching balls before Jay never got there, like, that's saying something. And then if you test the way he tested, some of that stuff translates for sure. And if you're built that way, but I don't know, is he just a slot receiver? Like, is he just going to win in the slot? Is he outside? Does he win outside the way Jamar does, the way Justin Jefferson does? If you're looking at other LSU receivers, I'm not sure.
How much did he play in the slot in college, Baldy? Was he almost exclusively there?
A lot of his, he played. I mean, they were a typical multiple offense where they had motions and he'd motion into the slot and run out of the slot. He'd line up there, but he was outside. You know, they had their hit screens and things that, but there were things that he definitely did from the slot position that seemed like, I mean, I have to go back and really look at the breakdown, but it seemed like a lot of his big plays were out of the slot.
Yeah, he's got that burning speed. So who do you have as wide receiver 4 then? Because it feels like there's a big drop-off as the consensus after the top 3. They're all good, and there's maybe 5 more first-rounders, but there's not a consensus on what the order is after.
Well, I mean, I could make case for Brian Thomas Jr. from LSU. I could make case for Ricky Pearsall. Like, Ricky Pearsall, to me, looks like Julian Edelman, but faster. You know, he's just as tough. He runs all those routes. I interviewed him the other day on NFL Network, and I said, like, how are you always open? Like, it reminded me of Puka last year in the NFL. Like, I'm not saying he's Puka, he's faster than Puka, but I would say, you know, the one thing about Puka is he was always open, and then he was excellent after the catch. So I don't know what the 40 time means, because he didn't run like that in the combine, but nobody caught him from behind. You watch him against Indianapolis go win the game. You watch him all year long on his way to all the catches they had. Like, the guy was always open. It was just remarkable watching him. From the opening game of the season against Seattle, he was always open. So, I mean, can Ricky Pearsall be like Puka? Can he be like as dependable as Edelman became once he really became Edelman and he took over, you know, in the slot receiver in New England? Like, that guy looks really good to me. Mitchell from Texas looks really good. I don't know if there's a big drop-off. If you like big receivers, is Keon Coleman a guy that, you know, you want to plug in there? I think it depends on what you're looking for right now after those 3.
Baldy, do you think that the Vikings can stay where they are and get J.J. McCarthy? Or are they going to have to use the ammunition they got from that trade with Houston a few weeks ago to move up and get him? Because it seems like, and everyone heard this at the combine, that the Vikings loved him, and that became their guy once the Cousins to Atlanta thing happened, and they were just emboldened and fell in love with him even more after meeting with him there in Indianapolis. It seems like that's going to happen, but how do you think it happens? Do you think they have to move up, and where do you come down on this McCarthy love affair that seems to be going on between not just
Minnesota? Here's what I say is, like, I remember talking to Cam Newton about this at the Super Bowl this year. I remember when Cam was coming out, there was a lot of analysts out there that were just trying to rip him apart. Why he had to transfer from Florida, junior college, 1 year at Auburn, whatever.
Laptops, stuff, et cetera. Yeah.
All that stuff. Okay. And then they were just finding, like, he's not accurate. You know, he's never going to be accurate. And then he throws for 400 yards in his first, you know, two games, 400 yards in each game. And he just tells everybody, like, the hell with, you know. So I always feel like, going back to Cam, and even before that, that everybody, and you're seeing this with, you know, even Caleb right now, that these guys at the top of the draft, everybody tries to find something to tear them apart. It just seems part of the process. It's 4 months of it. So you can't just sing kumbaya about every player, except this year, except J.J. McCarthy. You can't find anybody say anything negative about J.J. McCarthy, because in truth, there's very little to tear apart because of the system. Like, I would say, if you put J.J. McCarthy in Michael Penix's offense, and it's Coach Ryan Grubbs, is it's bombs away, would J.J. McCarthy have that team on the precipice of 15-0 the way Michael Penix Jr. did? And, you know, run Texas out of the gym, come back against Oregon, come back against USC, all the stuff that he did. Would J.J. do that? He was never asked to do it. I don't know. But I kind of say he couldn't play at that level. Like, that's just me. I happen to like Michael better than J.J., but you can't find anybody to say anything bad about J.J. And look, it helps that the coach is his Jim is in the Chargers, and he's saying he's the best quarterback of this draft. Like, I would say the same thing if I was Jim. But I just don't know. Like, I can look at a couple throws against Ohio State and a couple throws in some games, but ultimately, they were so much better. How many guys are going to have drafted in this draft? 14, 15, 16 players? Like, they're the most talented team in college football, probably, you know, outside of Georgia, probably 2 years in a row. Like, how much did he have to do? And that's what's difficult for me to see. Okay, are the Vikings going to trade to 3 or to 4 to go get J.J. McCarthy? Because I feel like, to answer your question, they can't stay at 11 and get him.
Why? Who's going to take him then if they don't?
Baldy? I think the Giants might take him. I think the Giants are in a quarterback mode. Maybe they take him. Maybe they look at his size and, you know, just his demeanor and winning and all this. And, okay, we'll bring him and we'll see if Daniel Jones can do it. And if he can't, we're going to go to J.J. I can see that. Does Sean Payton love him enough to, like, sacrifice a bunch of assets to go up and get him? I don't know. You know, is he quarterback number 3? Is he number 4? And if he is, like, is somebody going up to get him, or the Giants interested right there? Is the Atlanta Falcons interested in a quarterback? You know, I mean, I know Kirk Cousins is there, but I had a premonition this morning saying, why wouldn't the Falcons be interested in one of these quarterbacks? I know Arthur Blank really well. This Falcons franchise turned around the day that Mike Smith and Matt Ryan got together. And then, and they were a winning franchise nearly every year after that. And, you know, we think that Kirk Cousins is probably good for 2 years, maybe, coming off an Achilles at his age. But if he's not, they better have something ready to go. Maybe this year they start grooming a guy.
That would be a staggering draft pick.
Well, maybe they'll do it at 8. You know, Danny, maybe they move back and they
right.
get Michael Penix or somebody. But I think that there's some level of interest in Atlanta thinking about a quarterback, even though there's other needs. Like, they just have been 7-10 3 years in a row.
Yep.
And basically non-existent in the NFL. And I think Arthur Blank, like, is sick and tired of it. They gave all the money to Kirk. That's great. Kirk got paid. He got him a 4-year deal. Minnesota's willing to give him a 3-year deal. He goes. But how many years is it really for?
More with Brian Baldinger after this on First and Pod. You can check him out in the huddle, Odyssey NFL Insider. Back after this. All right, back in with Brian Baldinger. Subscribe, rate, review, follow this man. He has excellent insight. He actually grinds the film. So this is not going to be a short question. This is a little bit rambling, but I really want your thoughts on it. Josh Lucas was Ryan Pace's number two in the Bears front office. He was there when they drafted Trubisky. He was there when they drafted Justin Fields. And now he is kind of trying to get into media, and he's just telling all of these truths. And so we've had him on the show sometimes, and I've talked to him. And, you know, he is a proponent of the S2 test. And I was like, okay, how did you guys spend 5 hours with Mitch Trubisky and 5 hours with Patrick Mahomes and come away that Mitch was smarter than Mahomes? Because Mitch would be the guy who would roll out to the right and instead of throwing the ball away, would run out of bounds and take a 3-yard loss. And Mahomes is the guy who could do no-look passes and seemingly see the game like Neo in the Matrix. And Josh Lucas swears that Mitch Trubisky could regurgitate everything for you on a whiteboard, but then he would really struggle when the bullets were flying, when it was live ammunition. CJ Stroud was clearly awesome at that, but he failed the S2 test. So that's my big preamble to ask you, how do we know, what is the best way to scout, not the intelligence of JJ McCarthy on a whiteboard, but what that dude is going to do if the Vikings take him when Aiden Hutchinson is crashing down on him? How do we actually scout what they'll do once the ball is snapped?
Well, it's all projection. I mean, the S2 test is what it is. I heard reports about, you know, Mitch when he was there, like, this is what you're doing on this play. And if it's not there, you go here, and then he does something else. I mean, it's from different coaches and the staff. Okay. I mean, it's,
I'm glad that you got that and the Bears didn't, and Patrick Mahomes isn't here. It's just my only nightmare. Go ahead.
Well, Jay Glazer got it wrong that day. Remember, like, they traded up to two, right?
Yeah.
And they thought they were taking, like, I don't know, Solomon Thomas, like, you know, John Fox was the coach. I don't think John Fox knew what they were doing. Like, maybe I'm wrong about that.
No, you're not wrong about that. They kept John Fox. They kept John Fox in the dark.
Because that's why, like, because John Fox was Jay's guy, and so Jay was reporting what John was telling him. Yep. And when the trade made, I don't know, was Solomon Thomas or whoever they were going to get. Like, that's what Jay reported. I'm pretty sure. Like, this is, you know, a little fuzzy now, but I kind of like they didn't even know what they were, you know, what they were doing. You know,
it was a flawed process, to say the least.
All right, that's good. To answer your question, it's such a projection. Everybody got Mahomes wrong, except Sean Payton, except Andy Reid. You know, John Gruden, when he was doing Monday Night Football, said he's the best quarterback in this draft. But I heard countless other analysts say there's no way that Patrick Mahomes is going to do what we've just watched him do. So they all get it wrong, but I don't know the answer to the question, because that's really the conundrum. Like, what does happen when Aiden Hutchinson is ready to crush you? Like, are you making the throw, knowing that you're just going to get blasted and you can still do what Mahomes does or do what Josh Allen does? Like, Josh Allen was never supposed to be able to complete 70% of his passes coming out of Wyoming because he wasn't an accurate guy. Nobody improves accuracy, except he did. He went to work on it, worked on his fundamentals, his footwork, and he did. He became a more accurate thrower. I don't know, like, some guys are just wired differently, and you can't tell because the college game is just so different than the NFL game.
Baldy, I'm going to ask you a very self-indulgent question, but I know I'm asking it to the right person, so I feel better about that.
Right.
The centers in this draft, I'm very interested in them because the Steelers, all we got right now is your boy Nate Herbig.
Yep.
And he didn't play center really at all last year. They cut Mason Cole. But there seems to be at least the possibility, I don't know when the last time this happened, that three centers could go in the first round of the draft because the kid from your alma mater, Barton, played tackle all year, but he's being projected as a center. Mm-hmm. So talk to me on these centers, Baldy. Like, are there three all-pro, Pro Bowl caliber centers really in this draft?
Well, let's just name them, first of all, for everybody listening. Jackson Powers Johnson from Oregon. Okay.
And then Danny loved him. At one point, Danny was smitten by Jackson Powers Johnson. Were you not? Was there
I mean, the guy seems to be very impressive. He's massive.
Yeah. Okay. Graham Barton. Yeah. He did play center the last five games of his freshman season at Duke and then the last 2 years at left tackle. I met him last year at the OL Masterminds down in Frisco. He was working out with Duke Manorweather down there. Nice kid, very smart. And then there's Zach Frazier. So I remember I plug in Zach Frazier. I'm watching West Virginia. And I text a particular personnel director in the NFL that is in need of a center. And I said, can Zach Frazier start for you first game of the season? He goes, and just all I got was TY. Like, yeah, totally. Like, he's our start. You know. So I feel like there's three guys at the top of this draft. Now, there's some other guys. You know, there's Cedric Van Pran at Georgia. You know, three-year starter, short arms, not really my guy. There's you could go all the way down to Hunter Nurzad, you know, at Penn State, and he looks like an intriguing prospect, not a first-round pick. But, I mean, this is a deep draft for centers. But I do think Dallas, Pittsburgh, if Miami wanted to fix their offense line, as soon as Connor Williams got hurt last year, the offense didn't look quite as good. I know Tyreek and they had the injuries to a lot of different key personnel. But if you wanted to, and obviously they need help on the defensive front, but if Miami wanted to fix their offensive line and put the best five up there for Tua and for that offense to click, center would be a good position. I mean, you make the case for five teams in this draft that could go center in the first round, and you probably wouldn't be hitting, you know, one of their two top priorities in drafting a center.
That's just not – I don't think that's ever happened, multiple centers in the first round. Do you care about positional value like that?
I care about getting great players, you know, and I don't care about, you know, what's happened in the past or positional value. I know I could go out and find, you know, Jason Kelce in the sixth round out of Cincinnati, I guess.
Yeah.
If you want to try to filter through all the sixth-round picks, you know, that might be able to become Jason Kelce. You know, and so you can find free agents. You can find guys that can play the position. Tyler Biadasz was, I don't know, third-round pick. You know, he's been a good player. Washington thinks enough of him to go sign him in free agency. There was a bunch of second-round picks last year that went, you know, Jets, Giants, second-round picks at center, and they look like they're the centers for, you know, foreseeable future. But I think when you get a guy that – like Graham Barton, I have a feeling he's going to be a really good center. I know he can play left tackle in this league, but I think he's going to be a really good center. So if you can upgrade, I always think this. If your center is weak or average, your offensive line is never going to be good or great. Like if there's a weakness in the middle, like Denver needs a center. They lost Cushenberry, who was just okay, but Denver could use a center. Now, I don't know if they'll do that at 12 or trade back and do it, but I feel like when your center is strong, you have a chance to have a strong offense. When, I think the Chargers could use an upgrade at center. You know, I could just go through the league and just look at these teams that have average or poor centers right now.
All right, we can get you out of here. So it sounds like Odunze was a favorite for you. You like Penix over McCarthy, but like they don't have to be the three best players in the draft, but like, your three favorite players that you scouted, who do you love?
I like Fuaga. I love Fuaga.
Guard or tackle, Baldy? Where do you put him?
I could play him at either one. I mean, I think he could be a Pro Bowl, a consensus Pro Bowl guard, but I know he could play tackle. So I love Fuaga and what his upside can be. I love Michael Penix Jr. I don't care what happened in the second half against Michigan. That guy is, I don't know, that guy's as sharp as they come, and he's an elite athlete. I like him. I love Rome. From a defensive standpoint, I like Newton a lot. I just think he's going to be – you're looking at all these defensive tackles, Wilkins, you know, Chris Jones. You're looking at these Quinnen Williams. You're looking at all these guys that are getting paid a defensive tackle in this league. Like, you need Jeffrey Simmons. You know, you just go through the list of guys that have just gotten paid in the last 3 years. You need that position in this league.
You like Newton over Byron Murphy?
Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's my number one defensive tackle.
Okay.
Yeah, Danny, you've never brought him up as a guy in Chicago as an Illinois guy. I'm surprised by that.
He's getting a little buzz, but people seem to think that Murphy would be more what Eberflus would go for if they do that, but I'm unless it goes, I've said this to you, Pony, unless the first eight picks are offense, four quarterbacks, three receivers, an alt, I'm pretty sure they're going to draft offense.
Do you know your Illini football?
No.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, who's the best blocking tight end in the draft?
I don't watch Illini football. I know Olin Kreutz's kid is at Illinois. I know
okay. That. All right. Is he a tight end?
No, he's a offensive
center. Okay. Now, this Tip Ryman from Illinois looks like the best blocking tight end that I've seen this draft. Like, I've been telling people in San Francisco they lost some tight ends. There'd be a good pick to pair with, with what they have there in George Kittle.
Hey, Baldy, we did this almost this whole entire podcast. I don't think it'd be fair to our listeners if we didn't at least get a thought on Jaden Daniels, who probably is going to go second in the draft. I know I'm somewhat skeptical. I said to Danny, he's older. And when he was Drake May's age, he had 10 touchdowns to 10 picks at Arizona State. So this is a meteoric rise from a guy who was maybe projected as like a six-round quarterback before last season started, won the Heisman, and is now looked at as quarterback two in this draft.
So I talked to Brian Kelly yesterday. And, you know, when he came from Arizona State, obviously they had the issues at Arizona State, so he's out. And Brian's recruiting him. Like, he wasn't a runner at Arizona State. They kind of unlocked that part of him. And my only concern, I have a couple concerns about Jaden. Like, he did throw 40 touchdowns and run for 10. He put up 50 touchdowns. All right, it's not Joe Burrow, 60 touchdowns. He's not Joe Burrow. But he was very good. But he's a slender guy, and he thinks he's Lamar. And we've seen Lamar get banged up. And Lamar's got a neck like a middle linebacker. So I don't see that from Jaden. Lamar's got a big frame. He's strong. And you can see the strength when he tries to, truck people and he doesn't go out of bounds. I'm worried about Jaden's frame and his ability to do what he did at LSU. Because I feel like he wants to run too soon. And when he does, he drops his eyes. And I'm a little concerned. But the arm talent and the overall athletic ability, like, I'm a fan. I do get concerned when guys want to run like he runs. And if that's going to transfer to the NFL.
The man does his homework, both in scouting the film and talking to the actual people. He knows everyone, and he gives you that expert analysis all throughout Odyssey and all the different platforms. But the In the Huddle podcast is a must listen. Baldy, thanks for joining.
Thanks, Baldy.
So, before I go, the Steelers taking a center in the first round?
No, they're not. They're going to take Amarius Mims, is what they're going to do, Baldy.
They're going to put Broderick over to left and put Amarius in at right.
They should day one, but my guess is they'll wait, and we'll have to watch Dan Moore for three or four games.
All right. Okay. But so Nate Herbig's the starting center right now until they find somebody else?
I think they should sign Connor Williams, Baldy, and say, at Thanksgiving, you're our starting center, and have Herbig play there until he's ready. But no one seems to want to agree with me on that.
When Connor was at Texas, I never remember playing center. I could be wrong. He didn't play center in Dallas. And I thought Miami had unbelievable vision to sign, because I thought he was very good at center for the Dolphins. I thought he was an excellent player. And I never could have projected that, just watching him at Texas and watching him in Dallas.
Well, text our buddy, who you might know, who is the second man there on the chain of command, and let him know that the two of us think Connor Williams would be a good Steeler, and see what he says back.
Right, now two of us. I'm in touch with that guy. So I'm sure that with the work that they've already done on this team, jettisoning one wide receiver that, no longer needs to be there. They're going to keep building. Going to keep building on that offensive wall for sure.
Baldy, good stuff. Thank you, sir.
Okay. My pleasure, guys. Talk to you soon. Okay, man.
Thank you. Thanks to Spencer Ray, our producer. Subscribe, rate, review. Give us 5 stars. First and Pod. Tell a friend. Peace.